food webs? Are you familiar with that term, food webs?
Food web, sure, yeah.
So what is, when you think of food web, what do you think of?
Lots of interactions, many different animals.
Yeah. So lots of interaction. Many animals. Are plants part of a food web?
Suppose so.
Yeah. What else do you think of?
Dependent on outside conditions.
Dependent on outside conditions.
Or external conditions.
How so?
You know, if there's a weather pattern that means the plant doesn't grow very well, then it can't be eaten. Or if it, you know, if there's a source of pollution that's introduced to the area, that might affect somebody's developmental ability.
Sure. Anything else?
I see. So something that happens to one part of the food web can ripple out to all parts
right.
of the entire web.
Yeah.
It's like a continuum.
Yeah. So what I want to start off with is a little weird, and there's only four of us. But we're going to give it a try. What I want you to do, I'm trying to be fancy, think of either a plant or an animal that you have seen in Holden, either a hike or around the village, anything. And grab a piece of paper, and there are some markers up here, and just do your best to draw it. Were you at 1.5 feet with me? And just, so you've got that half sheet. Just do your best to draw it, but make sure you write the name of whatever thing you're drawing. And it doesn't have to be the official name, I mean. It can be a little pink butterfly. Could be anything, and I don't expect you to know exactly what the name is, but if you've been on the wildflower, hiking with Barbara, or just hiking around on your own.
Okay.
Just
think
of,
I warn you, I'm not a very good artist at all.
That is okay. We're actually going to sit in a circle. So, why don't we...
You also be close across the...
Yeah. you were going to, pin that on the front of your shirt.
On the front of my shirt?
No, I have a pin. And then come on and start over here.
Thank
you. Mm-hmm. All right. I've been saying that the theme this summer is about foolishness.
Oh, yeah.
Come on over.
That's the circle. These are the smallest safety pins you can find.
I know.
Yeah,
only one thing.
A little bit of trouble here.
I think your chipmunk could eat my deer once. Well, on the safe side, the chipmunks around here are rather large.
That kind of looks like all of them you can draw in pictures.
Yeah.
Alligators, foxes, and
it's your standard animal.
My first eagle came out looking more like a penguin, so I crossed it out and tried to draw the one on the on the dollar bill. It looks kind of like Woodstock from the Sydney cartoons, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
You need him to be holding a fistful of arrows or something.
Yeah.
The stars over his head.
So what I want to do when you said that a food web was talking about lots of interaction and so what we're going to do is kind of talk about the ways that all the animals and plants that we drew are interacting.
Okay.
And so I'm going to start off, and what I'm going to do is I want you to think of any kind of interaction. It can be anything from I meet you to we eat the same thing, or we live in the same habitat, or really think broadly about what an interaction is. They don't even necessarily have to meet, but if they're using the same resources, then they are, in a way, interacting. That makes sense?
Okay.
So, we're just going to go around a couple of times and really think about how we're interacting. So, I drew Lily of the Valley, which we saw, Wild Lily of the Valley, which we saw on a hike today, and it had little red berries on it. And I would imagine that a deer might eat those red berries.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine the chipmunk would as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're only talking about the Lily of the Valley?
No,
any. Right.
His interaction with the new two
right.
are both eating them, so you're interacting
sure.
with the same
sure.
sort.
Okay. Well, I would be frightened of the eagle because it might eat me.
That's right. I think eagles probably find chipmunks quite tasty. I'm not sure.
Especially around here, they're quite fat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've
fought for a lot
of
pretty
them.
Sure anything would eat a chipmunk around here.
Okay. What? So we've already got the fact that an eagle might eat a chipmunk.
Mm-hmm. But it's something different.
Right. Well, I suppose the eagle fertilizes the ground, and that might help out the wild lily of the valley there.
Yeah,
true of all animals.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I would imagine that the understory of the forest would provide a habitat for a small chipmunk.
Yes, indeed. And in amongst that habitat might be a stream or source of water that the deer and I would both drink from.
Yes.
And the Lily of the Valley that
deer eats from in the stream would also be there because the trees provide him shelter, which the eagle would live in.
Okay. This is getting more and more difficult.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely easier when there are more people. Why don't we stop for a minute and think about what would happen so we know that this is, we kind of made a food web of Holton Village, right? So we know already that, or maybe I don't know, but the tail end of the mine have been reaching minerals into the stream, right?
Okay, yeah.
Which is killing off the insects, which then kills off the trout. And I bet that the eagle would eat the trout.
Okay.
So the eagle, if you drop your string, drop
everything?
Everything.
Put this?
Yeah.
Okay. And this?
So now all three of us felt that part of us go slack.
Right.
Okay. Can anybody else think of, so we had mentioned a food web depends on external conditions. Anybody else think of, hello?
Hello.
We can add a fifth person to our
yeah.
A fifth person to the circle. I'm sorry,
yeah.
I was in a meeting.
That's right. If you could quit, grab the paper over there, and draw any living organism that you have seen at Holton Village. Could be in the village or on a hike, anything. Anything else of another external condition?
That I think around here, man or humankind is a very large external
and how
condition.
Might they?
Maybe the creation and maintenance of the trails and the roads and all the paths.
And they've made the chipmunk much healthier.
Yes.
Where's my chipmunk?
Another chipmunk?
Oh, I didn't see that you guys are
just say it's a beer. You could be a
that's fine.
You could be a ground squirrel.
Yeah. Okay, now I'm going to
be... your spring. See what happens when the chipmunk gets fatter.
Mm-hmm.
And we all feel that,
right.
Too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And the eagle's very happy.
A lot more.
The eagle's very happy, yeah. Well, let's wind up the, what, let me just wind that up and we'll start
okay.
Again with Sonia.
I'm a spider.
You're a spider. That
my
spider.
Kids are freaking out about
insects.
The spider. In their bed.
And there are other, we even have safety tips. Or is that your bed?
Unless I have to run around.
No, we don't have to run around that.
And I'm an eagle, although my first drawing looks more like a penguin.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this other one.
Or maybe a cockatoo.
You want to start?
Sure.
So, Sonia, what we're doing is we are thinking of connections between our animals and plants. They can be anything. It can be that you eat somebody, or they eat you, or you live in the same habitat. They don't actually have to come face to face ever, but if they're competing for the same food or the same, that's still an interaction.
Okay.
So now we're just interacting. We're not talking about an external condition.
Yeah, we're going to make a new food web.
Okay. All right. Let's see. As a chipmunk, the chipmunk runs or enjoys the village because it can eat the same amount of food as the deer does.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Well, both the chipmunks and the deer like hanging out in the
village. Yeah,
tree,
exactly.
Right? Yeah,
exactly.
Eating what's on the ground.
I have a picture on my phone of the deer. I didn't think I was going to get very close to it, but then it came to us, and I saw I have a picture, a blurry picture of the body because its head was like here. I believe the deer and the chipmunk and whoops would share the same habitat as the spiders.
The spiders, absolutely.
Plenty of spiders everywhere.
Well, and I think the spider probably crawls along and up the stem of the wild olive valley.
And I think that the parents say that you would eat my milk.
Yes.
me. And I said that you would live underneath the other story.
If we're making a web, the same things.
What?
Can't the same things apply?
Yeah, but I would imagine that the eel might eat something that would eat me. So we don't have to do that one.
Okay. And so I'm not allowed to say the eagle might eat the chipmunk. We've already done that one. I can say it because I'm having trouble thinking of these eagles too.
And also, it makes a perfect star.
Whoops,
yikes.
Oh, it's
behind you.
Actually,
you're being.
Can you get it out? Now that we have our perfect star, I am going to observe that the spider and the chipmunk both need access to clean water to live.
A few spiders crawling around that nest. Let's see. Well, I would hang around a lot in trees. And certainly deer spend a lot of time in forested areas too.
And they would eat trees. They would eat the tree over here. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. So we mm-hmm. kind of rely on trees quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should we do one more?
Okay. I do believe the deer is still going to eat your
vegetables.
So, as long as they're there.
So then let's say that a forest fire comes along, and it's a low-grade one, but it goes to the other side of the forest, so there's no more lily in the valley. And then they come down there, and you can feel it. And see how that would really affect everyone, even if you don't quite think that you are connected. Can anybody else think of some kind of external condition that might affect the food web?
Well, flooding.
Mm-hmm.
Does that happen?
So in the spring, if there's a lot of snow, so what would flooding do to any of us?
Well, the spider might have a nest in a log, you know, over the water that then gets, you know, pushed down into the lake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, though, with the extra moisture and the water rising, that might allow a wild lily of the valley to grow, you know, closer to the shore because it got that extra moisture.
Mm-hmm. So I might be helped.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, certainly if the village, I don't think they would try and eliminate spiders because spiders are really helpful eaters, but if we used even pesticides for a beehive, which was an issue a few years ago, we had a really active beehive right in the end here, and we didn't want to use any poisons, but on the other hand, we had people who were really allergic to bees in the village, and lots of people were getting stung. So things like that where we, as a village, have to balance sort of health concerns and...
What did you end up doing?
No, they did not use any poisons on it, and eventually, I think they just waited it out. It took it down when it froze.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Because it really is, we're so close to the... It's such a close-knit web that...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Okay, so let's wind this up. And... We can take our signs off and just kind of talk about these different interactions. So, can you think of any benefit for scientists to come up with these food webs? Now, this one that we made it pretty simple. The all we find organisms that when you actually make up a food web, it gets fairly complex, you know, 20, 30 species. What would be the advantages of mapping all that out?
Well, go ahead.
You could make decisions about what to do with the tailings more easily. And if they came up with some idea of, well, we could just kind of flush it all out and it would disperse and wouldn't be in this area anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they, but it might end up having.
I can take your safety then.
Sure.
Okay.
If it ended up, you know, having a large kill off of fish in the lake, but, you know, not all of them, and it would be survivable, they just think, well, it's just going to have this small impact here,
mm-hmm.
so, and it'll have a better long-term benefit. But then if they studied the food web, they could see,
right.
you know, even this moderate die-off of the fish could end up having a big impact. Because
yep. And that's exactly right. So it's, it kind of ended up being like a map to an ecosystem, and it's a way for environmental scientists to really figure out what's going on. So when we talk about interaction between different organisms, you know, when we were talking about them, sometimes we were talking about interactions that were beneficial to both animals, and sometimes there was one that was maybe harming another one. So when you thought, so, somebody name one of the interactions that we came up with.
Eating.
What was that?
Eating.
Eating. So we said that the chipmunk ate the lily of the valley, right? So we had the chipmunk and the lily of the valley. So was that beneficial to the chipmunk?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was good for them. What about the lily in the valley?
It's dead. It's bad.
Bad for them. Yep.
But then also, where do you weigh that in terms of like controlling the
mm-hmm.
the plant balance on the forest floor? I mean, don't.
And if it eats the berries and then drops them other places,
exactly.
isn't that how they
right.
spread around?
Yep. So it starts to get, you're already picking up on how complicated this gets. Yeah. So normally we would call this herbivory. You guys know that word? And that's what we call it when an animal's eating a plant. But if we did, so let's say we wanted to say that the lily of the valley was benefiting too. Does anybody know what it means? When it's called when both species benefit from an
harmony.
What?
Harmony.
Harmony.
Boy, I've seen that word by
synergy.
Or
no.
Not quite. Called mutualism.
Mm, okay.
What was another interaction that we came up with?
Symbiosis, another word for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Well,
I think of symbiosis as referring a little more toward balance,
mm-hmm.
that something isn't balanced.
Mm.
But yeah.
So that would be if you took the chipmunks away, then the lilies might overgrow and the balance would be lost. So that would hurt the forest floor.
If
the chipmunk were the only thing eating the lily.
That would be in this scenario.
Right.
If we say that the chipmunk is hurting the lily in the valley by eating it, then yes, chipmunk went away and the lily in the valley would crumble. But if we are going with the idea that the chipmunk eats the berries and then disperses seed,
mm-hmm.
then you take the chipmunk away and it's hurt.
Right.
So depending on really what part of the plant it's eating, if it's eating the berries, it's going to help, and if it's eating the leaves, it's going to hurt it.
And when do you go up a level?
When they're in upper level.
Well, what about the plant right next to the lily of the valley that's being crowded out because the lily is so big?
That's another interaction. So, pearly everlasting. Mm-hmm. That's another plant that we all have. So let's say we said pearly, and then lily of the valley. So what's their interaction? What's their interaction?
Competing for resources.
They're competing for resources. So, is that helping or hurting the pearly everlasting to be competing?
Well, it hurts them both, right?
Yep, hurts them both. Yep. So, when they're both hurt, then we call that competition, which is pretty obvious. So yeah, definitely have interactions like that. I don't think anything like that really came up in our discussion.
We didn't have two plants.
No, but we did talk about both the chipmunk and the deer eating the lily in the valley. Mm-hmm. So that would be that same, that then they'd be competing. What other interactions did we come up with?
The spider living in the nest of that eagle.
The spider living in the nest of an eagle. So in that instance, the spider being helped or hurt by the eagle?
Helped.
Helped? What about the eagle?
The spider provided pest control for the eagle nest, that would help.
But does the eagle nest really need pest control?
It's probably neutral. It might be mm-hmm. positive, but...
Probably neutral. And that's okay, yeah. So when something is helped and something is hurt, we call that hermeticism. And there's some debate about whether or not that actually is it. You know, which we kind of... You know, the old maybe the spider's doing something, and, you know. So it could be that we just, the interactions that we had were like this way, we just don't really know what the benefit or harm is to something.
Well, I suppose the eagle could always eat the spider.
They would, though.
I don't think their beaks are such that they can eat a spider.
Yeah.
If chicken would eat the spider.
Yeah. Any other interactions that we came up with?
Well, to me, and given, I guess this is just my human-centric thing, but I just think all the time about how all of these organisms are interacting with this village. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fascinating to me. I'm sure it's time of day as well, but when you come out of Vespers, the deer are always in the village. Mm-hmm. So it's like they know that everybody goes to Vespers during that time, and they're all up, and then you can see them go back into the woods.
Well, and that happens to be around dusk, which
is
when they eat anyway,
so it fits, but it always comes right during that time.
And that's something that we haven't really talked about, in the human impact of the village. So, and to think about the humans and the deer, so the deer are getting helped, right? And does it really affect us?
Brings us joy, I think.
We enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. And that's, yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, though, there might be longer-term consequences that could be bad for the deer. You know, like if they have to close the village for a year to remediate the mine. But the deer have become so used to eating the scraps of food from the mm-hmm. humans that they have somehow lost... their competitive edge, then they'd have to go a year without those table scraps and might have a hard time finding food or something. I don't know.
But I would say that that was more of an external effect on the food web. That,
that's
this
true.
Relationship would still stand.
That's true.
Just because we're allowing, if we're providing food for the deer and allowing them to multiply beyond what the environment would naturally provide for them, we're still part of that environment, and we're still helping them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If we get removed because of some external influence on the food web, then that's gonna hurt the deer. Yeah.
Well, and certainly we affect the health of the chipmunks up here.
Yeah,
we're
going to
see like a diabetic epidemic. obese chipmunk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this definitely went a little quicker than I imagined.
Because we brought as many people.
That's all right. So if you have any other comments or questions, but otherwise this is kind of all I had.
How are webs like these used in, you know, what are some other real world scenarios?
Yeah.
You know, like even non-scientists doing this to plan around an engineering project or a development of a housing project or something.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that the kind of web interconnectedness is obviously used in other scenarios, but I kind of only know about the scientific uses. And mostly it's a way to map out an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And, I happen to study monarch butterflies, so I am more interested in just one species, but other ecologists would study an entire ecosystem and be more interested in, you know, prairie ecology or mountain ecology around here. And then you would probably be more interested in food web and use them. You could use them to figure out what happens when there is some environmental disaster. But you could also just use them if you were studying a new ecosystem that nobody had studied before. Like if you went down into South America or Asia or somewhere where, you know, people hadn't really been yet, that would be kind of the first step into work towards developing a food web. With the idea that it obviously wasn't necessarily, you couldn't finish it, you couldn't map out everything that you could get. And certainly you scientists would compare food webs from different ecosystems to find trends. I mean, we know that in every ecosystem there are producers, there are plants, there are animals that eat plants and animals that eat those animals, and that there are trends, and so you can map these out to find trends. Yeah.
It seems like an absolutely unending task to me. I mean, if you really start, just because you start to think about each component of the ecosystem. I mean, even the plants, when we say, well, that was sort of, you know, their competition, but, you know, the pearly everlasting may change the pH of the soil, which is actually beneficial to the leaf. I don't know, it just seems hard to know when you would stop.
When to stop. And I think that would depend on the nature of the question. So if you were, I mean, taking the mine tailing example again, if you were interested in figuring out, okay, what is this doing to the ecosystem around the village, and I think you would just start just kind of the way that we did. And you think, okay, I know that the mine tailings are leaching into the stream. Well, just like we did with the ball of yarn, okay. If the stream is becoming more acidic, that's going to affect all the insects. You know, and you say, okay. So now you add over the insects, and then you start to get one each insect. And you figure out what the salmon do, and kind of go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So there are multiple ways to come at it.
Have they created, computer programs for doing this, if people are doing assessment analysis that help you sort of figure out if you pull on one side and
mm-hmm. Sure.
Or what about the elasticity of the web, or is it, you know, how mm-hmm. if you drop some of the things, you know, not every little change in the environment ends up in a, you know, chain reaction disaster that wipes out the planet. So, you know, do they look and see like how flexible it can be to
Well, and that's something that we didn't get into with our little food web, but that, you know, let's say something happened to the pearly everlasting. Well, so maybe the Lily of the Valley benefit grows in there and doesn't really matter, you know.
Or what if something happens that is bad for both the Pearly Everlasting and the Lily of the Valley, but you know, because it's negative for both, one of them ends up being stronger because after a period of 6 months or something, the other one completely dies out, and then the Pearly Everlasting can expand.
Right.
You know, so you might have something that's at first negative and then becomes positive.
Right. So one happened to last longer than
right.
the other. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's just like when we're driving across Montana over to hear the pine beetle that is just destroying huge mountainsides of pine. You think, what on earth? I mean, just so overwhelming. I'm sure these things can help you think it through, but what is going to be the impact on those forests and mountains and ecosystems of just that one epidemic? It's going to wipe out just a huge number of the trees. And obviously it will give life to something else that will come up behind it.
Right. But then, oftentimes, you know, an ecosystem where you're used to having all those big trees, it actually wouldn't, because what Lily in the Valley say, that again, wouldn't need shade to grow. Or, like I know in Minnesota, one of the big problems with reforestation is that little maple seedlings, they need that shade too, from the bigger ones, to grow. And even though an adult maple is fine in the sun, that's a tree that's supposed to be up in the canopy getting the sunlight, but as a young tree, maples need shade or they dry out. Mm-hmm. So you've got different parts of the life history of an organism would need different things too. So it does get really complicated.
Yeah, that's why I suppose you don't see in a big park, you don't have the maple, little volunteer maples in the open spaces then, because they're fried by the sun.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. But it's obviously it's a lot of work because somebody needs to go along. And I mean, we know a lot about the maple tree, but somebody needs to go along and figure that out, you know, in order to, you know, you were talking about making a food web on a computer so you can make a giant one, but you still need to know about all of those plants and animals in there.
Do they have I guess somebody already asked a question like this, but do they have software such that you could go to a region and just kind of take a census of what animals and plants are there and plug it in, and it would kind of generate a food web for you somehow, because it knows, well, chipmunks eat this.
Not that I know of. I would imagine that there is software to analyze food web, but you would have to import all of that yourself.
Do you think such a thing would be possible, or do you think that's too generic? That you would you actually have to observe the chipmunks eating the Lily of the Valley in this particular place to say that it's a food source for them?
Yes and no. I mean, there are obviously common things about all chipmunks that, you know, we could make some generalization. But I think for the most part, if you were trying to look at a particular ecosystem and actually learn some very real things about it, you would need to do that light work to really know the ins and outs of the different organisms you're putting in the food web.
Okay.
I think that what you're thinking of would be more useful for an educational setting, where there would be some stock list of organisms that you could choose from.
Right,
and,
exactly.
You
that's
know,
what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And say there are, you know, you have a region of this type of, you know, chaparral or whatever kind of growth, and you have X number of chipmunks, X number of deer, X number of eagles, X number of spiders.
Right.
You know.
It almost seems like you could turn that into like a computer game for a fifth grade science class.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Or like Civilization or something.
Yeah.
A bioweb instead.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And think about all the, you know, I just think about pH. I don't know why I'm stuck in there right now, but even thinking about the plants and the pH that they require, and then also thinking about then, well, what happens if you just change the acidity of the creek by just this much because of X, Y, or Z that were.
Well, it's interesting in Minneapolis. Are you from the Twin Cities at all? I know we were from.
I am from Minneapolis.
They've got this new Mill City Museum, and comes from Minneapolis, where there's a lot of the flower mills.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you can do in the museum is they have a little replica of the, you know, the Mississippi River running down, and then you can move a little bar in the river to control how much water goes into the dam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just moving that bar of the dam by an inch makes, you know, that much more power available to mill that much more grain and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You can see how just any little tweak that you think, well, I'm just closing the dam by a foot, what's that going to matter, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas how the hydroelectric plant here for this village would affect the wildlife?
I don't have a good enough sense of where it is on the stream and how, and exactly what that's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine, you know, anytime you're diverting water off a bit, that you're shrinking the size of that stream for some stretch, even if it's returned. And any organism that would get diverted off with it may not make it out the other end.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. Kind of taking that one step further, one of the real frustrations, I think, with a lot of green energy techniques is that there seems to always be some negative.
Mm.
Like wind turbines. We're worried about migrating birds getting sucked. You know, I mean, one wind turbine here and there doesn't make that big of a difference, but, you know, they're talking about putting entire fields in South and North Dakota of wind turbines. And this is a big concern. There was something up in the Northeast about that too, wasn't there?
Well, plus a real complex wind turbine, that's a multi-million-dollar
machine.
So then the energy company is saying, well, I don't want to lose my $5 million wind turbine because a bird flies into it, or it goes both ways.
Do wind turbines affect monarchs?
Probably not, no.
They're probably too high up in the air.
Well, when they were they fly pretty high when they're migrating. But generally, I don't.
Go over there.
Yeah, and I think that they're so light that the change in the wind dynamic leading up to the wind turbine might affect that, unless they just get sucked in. I don't.
Do you know, with solar technology, I mean, I know you have to get a lot of chemicals for that, are they you know, creating a second generation solar technology that has, you know, where the chemical stuff is different, or?
They are working on that, but there's nothing, they can't really fit. That's what Alex, a friend of ours, works on solar panels. They are trying to do that, but they haven't figured it out yet. So that's one of the big problems with solar panels, is you can't throw them out because they're full of toxic chemicals. So that's kind of a long-winded answer to the hydropower thing, but I'm sure it affects it.
Well, but it's just the whole connected web. Anything you do, even if it's a positive, has a negative.
Mm-hmm. I think on some level, the human, we tend to think of ourselves as separate from the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And we have kind of done that ourselves. But we really are part of it. So I think that building a huge dam that spans across an entire river and chops up an entire ecosystem is not right. But you could argue that. But that, you know, a little one like at Holton, we get to have stuff too. I mean, you know, you see interaction, not everything is help. You know, nature is not everything helping everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can have some negative impact. It just has to be in balance.
Right. Well, and if we didn't have the dam, we'd have to haul up fuel oil and have a generator running to create electricity, you know.
But then I think that whole village is a really great example of a way that, you know, there's 500 people here at a time, sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where, you know, this little community of 500 people can live fairly self-sustaining with small environmental impact. Granted, there's a super fun side here, but when I think is really ironic. But that really, I mean, super fun aside, here is a collection of people who are living pretty lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
Oh, yeah, relatively speaking, there's almost no, I mean, we do have the buses, and obviously there's work going on now, but there's almost no automobiles.
Right.
Although I sometimes wonder if you added the collective petroleum use to...
To get here? That's a good point.
Yeah.
In the village at any one time.
Well, and the, and the ferry, and whatever the ferry is doing in the light. And, yeah.
But it's also, it's a one-time journey to get here. It's if you're, you know, if you fly to Europe and then go to 10 different cities and fly home, you know, you're busing between those. But I mean, it's...
But the village itself, I mean, there were 500 people who lived here all the time, you know, then it would be. So.
No, I think you definitely, if you looked at the Mayan village when they lived here, the impact on the environment was much different than what we have
here. Plus, then I'm sure they had just dumped their cyanide in the river and said, oh, you know, it's flowed downstream, or arsenic, or whatever they were using.
Yeah, I don't think you're mining at the same time that you're really concerned about environmental impact.
No.
They don't really go together.
But they probably still have the good sense to get their water upstream.
Yeah.
It's so funny how good the water is, but then we're on a Superfund site, you know.
Yeah, because we have a good sense to get it upstream, too.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
If you like.
I'll take my drawing.
My drawing.
Make sure no one ever sees it.
Yeah, my chipmunk's missing an ear and feet.
Well, I have my speaker mammal that could be a lion or a fox or a
chipmunk.
No, you've grown all of them.
Oh, did you draw this on a rock?
No.
Oh.
Did you draw this on a stone?
Yeah.
It has that.
That
texture.
Oh, right.
You
have it already?
Yeah. All animals that you draw kind of look the same.
Yep, this is my standard mammal.
When we play Pictionary, that chicken, or that, what well, mine looks like the chicken too, but that chipmunk looks just like the foxes you draw.
Oh, yeah.
And an alligator,
you
got one that
well,
looks
Pictionary
the same.
Well, Pictionary is not a good measure, because Pictionary has a pressure.
Well, and this is the chipmunk has two stripes. That's your clue. If it's a fox, it's got a pointy head.
It's sort of like cave drawings.
Exactly.